espionage, a fight on a train, a MacGuffin, telepathy, clairvoyance, cyborgs, and a lot of poop jokes are some of the things that make the just-released spy movie Spy Family Code White a fun movie to watch. Hi, this is Tom from SpyMovieNavigator.com and our show, Cracking the Code of Spy Movies. Today, I'll give you our no-spoiler review of Spy Family Code White, and we'll include an interview with a college student named Dave who can help us understand some of the nuances of this Japanese movie. So let's start with some of the basics. The title of the movie is spelled Spy X Family Code White, with an X between spy and family. However, the X isn't said and the franchise is just called Spy Family. Spy Family was originally a manga cartoon. Next, it became a 37-episode show that was available on Crunchyroll and now is available on Disney Plus through Hulu. Spy Family Code White is the first movie that has come from the Spy Family franchise. Now, if you're a fan of the series, you will likely like this movie. That said, if you haven't seen any of the previous Spy Family content, this movie should work on its own for you, but we're going to fill in some of the background from the series that didn't make the movie that I think would be helpful. We think having more background can help because there are some blanks in here that if you don't know the background could be a little tough. So again, we'll try to fill in some of it here, but you might want to watch the first three episodes of the series if you want to get a better handle on how and why the Spy Family was formed, because it's pretty important. Spy Family Code White is rated PG-13 here in the US, and we'll talk about some of the reasons why during this review. You also need to know, and this is really important, that Spy Family Code White is being released in the US in two forms, and you want to make sure you go to the right one for you. Now, the first form is what I saw, which was the Japanese version with English subtitles. I was with a college student named Dave, who's a student of Japanese culture and language in college, and we'll hear more from him in a little bit. The other way this movie is being released is with English dubbing. And given that this is an animated movie, dubbing can be quite effective. It's not as off-putting as seeing real actors being dubbed with their mouth moving differently than what you're hearing. Now, we think that if you're going to take an English-speaking middle school child to this movie, dubbing's the way to go. If you've got a Japanese student or a Japanese child, I would go to the Japanese version. And we'll talk a little bit more why when I talk to Dave. So, you want to make sure you know which version your theater is showing. Now, some of the AMC theaters around me are showing both versions. So pay attention because you don't want to walk into the wrong one if you're expecting to see the dubbed version and then having to deal with the subtitles. The streaming version of the show on Disney Plus that I watched is dubbed. So if you do go to Disney Plus, it is the dubbed version of the show. It's not subtitles. I probably would have seen the dubbed version of the movie if I hadn't been with Dave, because I wanted to actually understand what he was hearing versus what I was reading. And I'm glad I saw the subtitle version because some of Dave's classmates were in the theater, and they were reacting to some of the scenes where either I had no reaction or a different reaction than they did. And the reason for this was that they understood the Japanese that was being spoken, and they weren't reading the subtitles. They were getting some subtle differences that the translation naturally creates. I mean, you never get a one-for-one translation. Plus, they understood some of the cultural things that were happening that I didn't. Okay, as we've said, we're going to keep this review no spoiler. And I feel that it's safe to tell you about the main players here, because A, I don't think it's a spoiler, as it's in the trailers, the synopsis from the studio, the manga books, and the series. It all has this information in it. And the first few minutes of the movie explain this to you. Now, the main players are Lloyd, who's a very talented spy. And although he's single, he needs a family for one of his missions. And it's one of those long game missions. It's going to be, you know, it's not going to be something done in like one semester. So it's going to take a while. His pretend wife, Yor, is an assassin. But neither Lloyd nor Yor know about the other's real jobs. And they've got an adopted child named Anya, who's telepathic. She can read minds, so she knows that Lloyd is a spy and Yor is an assassin, but the two adults don't know each other's real roles. So it's kind of interesting. And Anya can't let them know she's telepathic. And so it's kind of an interesting setup there. And then they've got a dog called Bond, who of course wears a black bow tie. And, you know, Bond is clairvoyant. So he can see the future. And interestingly, since Anya can read minds, she can read Bond's clairvoyance as well. So when she's around the dog, she can actually sometimes see what's going to happen, which is kind of interesting. As for the plot of the movie, the official website, spyfamily.com, tells us, "He's a spy, she's an assassin. Together, Lloyd and York keep their double lives to themselves while pretending to be the perfect family. However, their adopted daughter, Anya, a telepath, knows both of their exciting secrets, unbeknownst to them. Well, under the guise of taking his family on a weekend winter getaway, Lloyd's attempt to make progress on his current mission, Operation Strix, proves difficult when Anya mistakenly gets involved and triggers events that threaten world peace." So that's the write-up on their website. And now we know who the main players are, and they're going to go on a weekend winter getaway. Now, for those of you who are fans of the series, most of the second season of the series was about them on vacation as well. This movie is about a different vacation, but it does seem to be a trend for the franchise. Okay, so that's the basics of the movie. And one question we must ask is, for whom is Spy Family Code White targeted? Given the PG-13 rating here in the US, it isn't for children. If you think about it, pretty much all the Bond movies are PG-13 as well. We're going to talk more about who it's targeted for when we talk to Dave. But even though there are many scenes that a young child would like, there are some more mature themes that come up. And for instance, and I'm going to use a swear word here as I do this, so fair warning. One of the things is language. Remember, I was reading the subtitles. But even when I watched the dub series, the word shit is said in a few various forms. Now, the child Anya never says the word, but it is a word that comes up a couple times in the series as well as in the movie. Two other reasons for the rating are violence and smoking, and there's also a scene where a character gets drunk. So, those are the reasons for the rating, and hopefully you can decide if Spy Family Code White is right for your child. Oh, and the movie clocks in at an hour and 50 minutes, which may also be a deciding factor if your child doesn't want to sit through a movie of that length. Now, this is a Japanese movie, and there are some subtleties that a non-Japanese person may miss. So to help with this, let's hear from Dave. I'm going to have him start off telling you a little bit about his background, and then we'll talk about the movie.
I'm half Japanese, and I have some indirect experience with Japanese culture. And I also grew up watching a bit of Japanese TV and reading some Japanese manga.
Okay. And when you say you have indirect experience, you've got the your grandmother came over from Japan, correct?
Yes.
Okay. All right. So, and she's taught you a lot about what's going on in the culture and Japanese cooking and stuff like that too, to kind of indoctrinate you a bit there, right?
Yeah.
And part of your Japanese TV and reading of manga has been the Spy Family stuff?
Yes. Yeah, over the pandemic, yeah, I read a lot of the Spy Family novels and just mangas.
Okay, cool. All right, so the movie is based off the mangas, which are the cartoon books, correct?
The anime series is also based off the manga series.
Okay. Now, I wanted to bring you into this because I don't have any Japanese cultural background at all. I've been to Japan, but I don't really know the cultural stuff, and I know that you do. So if you can help us over some of these hurdles of what I just watched, I really would appreciate it.
Yeah, I wouldn't say I'm exactly an expert, but I do have a Japanese background and I am familiar with anime and manga.
All right, cool. Now, before we get into the nitty-gritty on this, at a high level, what did you think of the movie?
I thought it was really good.
Okay, why do you think that?
I just thought it was just really heartwarming and just funny.
Okay. Now, you and I might differ on this one. There's a 40-year age gap between the two of us. So this movie was rated PG-13. What age do you think this movie was targeted for?
Probably middle schoolers, or high schoolers.
Okay. And I would think a little older in my mind, the top end of the middle school and into high school. And we'll talk about why. And I think some of it is culture. I mean, there is the use of the word shit, and fortunately, the kid in the movie says poop. But we do hear that word a couple times, and I don't know if it's because I saw the version that was in Japanese with English subtitles, if the dub version includes it. I know it does appear in the anime series as well. So would that be a fairly common strength of a word used in anime movies?
Yeah, and it's an anime, an animated cartoon, so it's just kind of meant to be taken. It's not meant to be taken that seriously.
Okay.
And it's really just meant to be more taken like taken lightheartedly. Like
okay.
even like with most of the terms like they use.
Okay. All right. Now, remember, David, that we don't want to include spoilers in this podcast episode, but we have to talk a little bit about the scene that blew my mind. And we're not going to go into all the details here, but I want to know what drugs they were on when they came up with this scene. There's a scene here that it might be 5 minutes long, and a big part of it is someone needing to poop. And to me, they dragged it on too long. And there's some other, I mean, this, and there's a part of it that just totally my mind exploded when I saw it. I mean, what were your thoughts on this scene?
I think it's just like kind of just differing sense of humor.
Oh, it's different between the Japanese culture and the American culture when it comes to that.
I guess for the audience.
Okay.
And just like for like what people here in America find funny or weird. But I mean, it also does borderline on like weird and funny too in Japan. So.
Okay. All right. I mean, even at one point in this movie, we even see a deity who was obviously in this thing for humor, and that one also blew my mind. Do religious characters play much of a part in these movies?
Yeah, religious characters, they make a lot of Shinto references a lot in anime a lot.
Okay, so that wasn't as out of context for an anime as it would have been for like a regular normal Disney movie or something, okay?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, it's like how in America, like we make a lot of like Christian references or whatever religious like dominant references we make in our own movies.
Okay,
it's just like in their movies they make a lot of like Buddhist or like Shinto.
Okay, all right. So was there anything in the movie that you felt needed more background from the series or the manga?
Yeah, there was the thing about the peanuts, and some of the other mediums we see that Anya really likes peanuts.
Okay.
In the movie, like, that isn't really brought out nearly as strongly as the movie progresses. But we see it a lot more, like, expressed in the manga and in the series.
Yeah, that was one of the things that surprised me, too, because it was such a big deal in the series. And it was, you know, it was there kind of in the movie. In terms of the amount of violence we saw, I mean, again, this was PG-13. I thought it was relatively minor violence. You know, what'd you think?
Yeah, I thought it was also, you know, like relatively, yeah, minor and also just mild violence.
Okay. I mean, there's fighting and shooting and stuff, but you don't see a ton of gore or anything.
Yeah, no. Yeah, there's almost little to no gore, and it was more just like people passing out from, you know, from what it looked like, or just people having just like minor bleeding, like from their head.
Okay.
Or just, yeah, other injuries.
Okay. All right. And there was no sex in this thing at all. So, again, that'll help keep its PG-13 rating. Now, there was something about kissing, but I'm not going to go into it. It's a non-issue. Just trust me on that.
Yeah.
Right. All right. Now, another thing that you mentioned to me is that this is really a Cold War type movie, and the setting is the Cold War. So,
it's kind of a mix between, like, Cold War and almost kind of World War II.
Okay, so
in that sense.
So what are some things you see in the movie that are kind of interesting when you think about it today, but would have been correct back in the day?
For instance, and Lloyd has that watch on, which is also a camera.
Yeah.
But like yet he has a line that he also has to go to like develop like the pictures or and you wouldn't have to develop them today.
Yeah, absolutely. It'll all be digital. So
there's just different time period difference.
Yep, absolutely.
Compared to today.
Yep. Now, the movie is called Spy Family. And what about the family life that they try to show? I mean, remember, this is a pretend family. It was put together for a mission. Now, the kid doesn't necessarily know they're pretend. Well, maybe she does because she can read their minds, but there's a lot in terms of the wife's view of what a wife should be. And she doesn't think she's measuring up to that. And that's throughout the whole series, not just the movie. Is that a fairly common Japanese trait, or is it because of the timing of when during the Cold War or whatever this movie appears?
Yeah, I wouldn't say it's entirely like a Cold War thing. I would say it's just kind of just fitting like of the narrative.
Okay.
And that we can't forget about Yor's interactions like with her coworkers. They also make her doubt what kind of wife she is and how she fits within like her role in society and if even in, within her new family.
And the cool thing too is, since this is a spy movie, are these coworkers trying to plant something in her mind? I mean, are they a spy? You don't know. Yep. All right, so let's switch gears a bit. There was a scene in here where they tried to land a plane on another airborne vehicle. And I don't know else how else to say it. I mean, can you think of another movie where they did something like that?
It reminded me kind of like the planes landing in the Avengers movies
Okay.
and how they infiltrated the helicarrier in that movie, or how we see jets land on top of the aircraft carriers in movies like Top Gun Maverick.
Okay. All right,
And like
so
where the jet's flight landed on, the aircraft carrier in the sea and stuff.
So we've seen similar things to this in other movies, maybe played out a little bit different, but it kind of had that same vibe for you. Okay. Now, another interesting thing to me was you're sitting on my right, and to our left were some other students that were in one of your cultural Japanese classes. And I said this earlier, you guys are reacting to what was on the screen at different times than me. And I'm reading the translation in English, but I think you guys were getting more out of the Japanese spoken than I was getting out of the subtitles. So was there a little difference there between what was said in Japanese versus what the translation said?
Yeah, I would say there's kind of definitely some differences because they translate it the best that they can. The Japanese to English translators can, so that you can, as an English speaker, the English speaking audience can best understand it for like in the English context.
Okay.
And some things may eventually kind of get lost in translation sometimes. From what I've learned in my class is that one of the differences between Japanese and English is like English, it's like sentence structure is formatted and like it goes from subject, verb, and then object. For an example, in English, you might say like I hit the ball,
Okay.
whereas in Japanese, you would say the ball I hit, which
Okay.
that makes some translations, I guess, difficult
Yeah, that type.
for how they have to reword it.
That absolutely, that makes sense. So for some of these translations, we're going to get a bit of a different idea as to what's been said because our approximations of what is being said on screen in English and how you might say it in Japanese are different. So there are going to be some differences here.
Yeah, I mean it's all around the same idea. It's like you just kind of get the basis of what's being said in the context of the situation being presented.
Okay. There was another scene I wanted to talk about briefly here too, is there was some lipstick. And we don't want to give the scene away because this is a no spoiler episode.
Yeah, and I don't
But
know if the lipstick is already a spoiler or not.
lipstick in a movie is not uncommon. And now
Yeah.
lipstick also played a part in one of the episodes in the series, but it's treated very differently here in the movie. And you told me that the movie, it kind of felt more like another character that we've seen on TV here in the US.
Oh yeah, it kind of was more of what Yor did was more of kind of like a MacGyver moment, where
Okay.
Yor was stuck in a situation where she couldn't really do anything because she didn't have any other weapons or methods to help her get out of the situation that she was stuck in. So she just used the only thing that she had, which was the lipstick.
So the lipstick kind of becomes a gadget, not quite, but kind of, because like you say, she was just using whatever she had available to get something done.
Yeah, I guess like an impromptu gadget, is that
Yep.
how you'd say? Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good way to look at it. Now, we've already done a little bit of this when we talked about the plane landing on the other vehicle. But in our show, one of the things we try to do is look at tie-ins to other movies. Now, there's a very big tie-in to the James Bond franchise in this movie. Can you talk about
Yeah, Anya's dog Bond is
that?
definitely a big like a reference to the James Bond franchise. And yeah, he's a big white fluffy dog who wears a black bow tie. And if that's not a callback to Bond, then yeah, nothing is.
That's very true.
One of the things also in the manga and the series is that Anya's a big fan of the TV show Bond Man, which again is another reference, and that's why she called the dog Bond. It's also, and also from the TV shows where she gets most of her thoughts and like ideas for like what she thinks like a spy is and how she interprets Lloyd's job.
Yeah, and I think that's one thing missing if you didn't see the series or read the manga, is you miss that piece of it. And I think it's an important piece. But you do have to love the homage paid back to James Bond with this.
Yeah, and you know, it's actually interesting. If you watch the Spy Family series, you'll notice as the series goes on and as the story devolves that so does the family. And they grow closer together because at first you have just Lloyd by himself. And then he's assigned the mission, and then he adopts Anya, and then it's just him and Anya for a bit, and then they just together they grow closer together, and they even have their own wholesome moments that we see in the show. It's just a really wholesome moment.
Yeah, and you get that bond between the two of them much more in the series because they build on it, and we have to remember again. I've said it before. This is a fake family. This is a pretend family for a mission. Anya may not know it, but Lloyd does get emotionally attached to Anya.
Yeah, yeah, and then we see Yor comes into or falls into the mix, and she even struggles at first to kind of find her place in their family. Yeah, but then over time, like as the series goes on, we see her obviously grow through that.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, so these two things really are part of getting the background that would be helpful in the movie, but they don't show you, but they're there in the earlier parts of the franchise. And again, you can't spend 45 minutes getting everybody up to speed.
Yeah.
So as I've said before, if you want to, if you have Disney Plus or Hulu, you might want to go see the first three episodes or something just to kind of get a bond to what the relationship is before you see this.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. The links in the movie aren't as strong as like the links that we get in the from the show.
Okay. Now, the dog Bond has a special bond, no pun intended, with Anya because he's clairvoyant. What's the benefit to Anya of Bond being clairvoyant?
Yeah, it's funny how this comes into play, and like this comes out much stronger in the series. And like Bond was trained for a mission, and he's clairvoyant. And like we have to remember that Anya can like read his mind too, so like whatever he's thinking or in the future, Anya can also see for like the future supposed to be, which is kind of interesting, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he can think it, and she can read what he's thinking. She can read the animals as well as humans. Kind of crazy.
Yeah, and there's another scene in the movie that I really liked, and it ties back to like you and Dan talk about tying back to other spy movies, which is there's a train scene, as you guys have said, and you can't have a movie without a train scene, or a spy movie without a train scene.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. I mean, yeah, there's even a fight on the train, which is again another great callback to earlier spy movies.
Also, you can't forget about the masks, because they use masks for disguise in all parts of the franchise, like in the manga, the anime, the episodes, and even now in the movie. And also, like, for me, that's just an instant callback also to the Mission Impossible movies where they have to, you know, make the masks in those too.
Yeah, and they use the masks heavily in Mission Impossible. But unlike Mission Impossible, these masks seem to be created almost instantly. I mean, I kept thinking, where did he get that mask? It's just all of a sudden it's there.
Yeah, for an anime movie, I didn't really think that, but like it didn't really particularly matter because you got just, I guess, the basic idea that he was just changing masks. And I mean, in an anime, it's not meant to be like real life or like a cartoon. It's kind of just meant to just be creative and imaginative.
Yeah, that's true. Now, there's another character in this movie that was creative and imaginative, and that there was this kind of cyborg kind of guy.
Yeah, yeah. When I first saw him, he gave me some Wolfenstein vibes, which if anyone would know what I'm talking about, but yeah.
So it made you think of the guy there. Tell us more about that.
Wolfenstein, it's a video game. It's like a German like a type game.
Okay. Well, that's cool. So you've got a tie in there.
Germany.
Yeah, I didn't get that one because I never knew anything about Wolfenstein. So that's interesting. All right, so let's go ahead and wrap this up. Did you like the movie and you think it's targeted at middle schoolers? Now, you're in college now, so that's your age group. And again, I said I'm a lot older, but I also enjoyed the movie.
Yeah, and I think they probably would like it more, too, more than we did, even though we liked it.
When you say them, the middle schoolers.
Yeah, the middle schoolers.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, depending on the age group.
Okay. Well, David, I want to thank you so much for this, taking the time to do this. This was great. I'm so glad you were able to take the time to see the movie with me and then being able to be willing to talk to us about it. So thank you very much.
No, yeah, thank you. I hope everyone else enjoys watching the Spy Family movies as much as I did.
So hopefully that interview helped give you some more context to the movie. Now, as Dave mentioned, there are parts of the movie that may have been influenced by other movies. And this is a favorite area of ours here at Cracking the Code of Spy Movies. So let's dive into a few of these tropes a bit more than we did in our discussion with Dave. Now, Dave mentioned the use of masks and how it had a feel of Mission Impossible. And masks are one fairly popular trope and a way to show deception that has been used on the screen for a long time. It's also used to cover up disfiguration. In our 2019 episode, Mission Impossible, Is It Impossible to Bring a Successful TV Show to Film? Mission Impossible Does It. We go into more detail on the masks, but it's safe to say that masks are not new. I mean, they were used way back in movies like the original Phantom of the Opera, The Mystery of the Wax Museum, and in those cases, it was to cover up a disfigurement. For deception, masks were used in movies like Star of Midnight, Peter Gunn, From Russia with Love, The List of Adrian Messenger, and even TV series like Mission Impossible and Scooby-Doo use masks. So masks have been around for a long time. So the movie Spy Family Code White does use masks, as it does in earlier parts of the franchise. If you watch the series, you'll see masks. You watch the movie, you'll see masks, because masks are quite helpful for spies if they're done well. Dave also mentioned the train sequence and how you need to have a train in a spy movie. And this is another trope that we talk about often because Dave is right. You can think back to the 1926 movie The General or Fritz Lang's movie Spion in 1928. I mean, even Hitchcock liked to use trains in his movies. Think of North by Northwest, The Lady Vanishes, The 39 Steps as examples. And of course, James Bond and Mission Impossible movies use this trope as well. One of the reasons we think trains are so effective, especially for spy movies, is that the characters are in a defined space with no real ability to escape. And that's what made Agatha Christie's novels so compelling. She would put people into a situation where they were stuck wherever they were, nobody could come in and nobody could come out. So if something happens on the train, someone on the train must be responsible for it. It heightens the drama of what's going on the screen. Now, there was also a thing where some of the characters can read lips, and they say different words out loud while their lips are telling their counterpart something else. So their mouths aren't in sync necessarily with what you hear. And we saw that in Mission Impossible 3 when Musgrave and Ethan are talking while Ethan is strapped down on that gurney. Musgrave starts, mouthing something to him so Ethan can understand what to do. And so it's kind of interesting to see that then pulled forward here in this movie. And of course, this is a spy movie, so there's got to be a MacGuffin. And in Spy Family Code White, it is a microfilm. We're not going to say more about how this MacGuffin is used in Spy Family, but as usual, the MacGuffin gives the character something they must get before the other side gets it. And it adds tension and a reason for the story. So should you go see Spy Family Code White? Did we like it? Should you take your kid if you've got kids? Well, we liked it. But to be honest, we like the series better up to this point. And maybe it's because there's 14 hours worth of content in the series, so they could get deeper into things. In terms of our favorite spy movies for kids, we'd rank the Spy Kids series and Spies in Disguise ahead of this movie. But this isn't a bad movie. And if you're looking for a spy movie to take your kid to in a theater, Spy Family Code White meets that desire very nicely. It would be a nice, as Anya says, ooting. Now, the ending of the movie alludes to the fact that there might be a second Spy Family movie, so stay tuned. And that's a wrap! This has been Tom of SpyMovieNavigator.com and our show, Cracking the Code of Spy Movies. Do us a favor and subscribe to our podcast show. That way you can be in the know and we'll reach more people. Thanks for listening. We truly appreciate it.